Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Why in the world would we want to subvert our community? In today's broadcast, I expose the paradoxical relationship that we should have with our different communities. Yes, we like our friends and our groups and our clubs and our teams and our associations and our gatherings. I mean, these are the bedrock of our lives and the meeting place of community. All this is true, but community comes with a very subtle catch. Join me now as we learn to see beyond the fine print of community and discover the only means of making it better. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am Kevin Winder, your host. I'm an online pastor, author, and uncoach. So glad to have you here. Welcome to the program and welcome to Sunday. You know, folks, if you're just tuning in for the first time, whether you're streaming this on your computer or on the app Streama, whether you're on the podcast or whether you're listening live on the radio, I want to welcome you to a series that we are in the midst of. Okay, so if it's your first time tuning in, I want to give you just a little bit of a backstory to kind of bring you up to speed. We're in week 6 of kind of a long view. And what we're doing is, if you're familiar with that phrase, you can't see the forest because of the trees, then you recognize the need to kind of pull back and gain perspective. You can gain the scale of the forest from a distance. You can't gain that scale of the forest from up close. And that's really important for our study today, because we're looking at John the Baptist and we're following Jesus in both of their lives. And they both talked about a kingdom, the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. And I've been saying all along that this isn't just about an evacuation strategy on how we get to heaven or get to this kingdom. This is a very subversive kingdom. It's a different kind of power. It's seen with a different kind of eyes. It's perceived very differently. And so because of that, people seem to miss it. And so what I'm doing is I'm pulling back and using sort of concentric circles in order for us to see each ring as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And part of this subversive process is that it subverts authority and institutional power. And so we saw that last week with the subversion of the family, and it seems wrong. There's a reaction to this when we first hear about it. But, you know, it's really part of the natural process. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later. Today we're looking at subverting the community, which is a broader spectrum picture for all the things that we do in our communities, in our little gatherings, in our clubs and stuff. Next week we're going to look at subverting religion. And then the following week we're going to look at subverting our government. Now these are whole big pictures here. And in order to see the pattern, we have to kind of dive deep. And that's why this series is taking the time to go through all of this stuff. Because once you see it, you can't unsee it. It really redefines certain key things that have typically been just the storehouse of the community church. Like, we're going to redefine the church today. We're going to look at some of these things about the government and our relationship to it and what is our stance on politics. We're going to look at, you know, how do we talk about the family and things like that. So I hope you'll stay tuned. I hope you go back and listen to all the other ones. And for those of you who have been listening and tuning in, I just want to say thanks. I'm so glad to have you here. And go to my website, kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield. It'll be your opportunity to get all this content sent to right to your inbox every Sunday morning. And you'll have an opportunity to interact with me anytime you so well please. KevinWinder.com, K-E-V-E-N, Winder.com, and go to Winder's Windshield. Do that today. Okay, so let's get right into it today, subverting the community. So, all right, we're going to paint with the wider brush today, as I already said. And I've elected to combine the institutions of friendship With a host of similar institutions such as academics, athletics, the arts, local community groups, hobbies, and other interests, okay? And, you know, just like I was saying, the institution of the family last week is similar to the institutions of community this week, as these are vital institutions which are important, and they play a very positive role in our world. So I'm not saying let's get rid of community, okay? And on the surface, let's face it, subverting a healthy functioning community seems like the wrong thing to do, doesn't it? I mean, why would you want to get rid of something that's so good and so positive? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. And so we have to first grasp not only the definition of subversion, but we have to understand the purpose of subversion. You see, I've shown that subversion actually means to turn from beneath or to undermine an authority. And so why would we want to do that with a local scouting troop or the marching band or your sports team? What about our closest group of friends? I mean, these are all really good things. They teach us discipline. They teach us sportsmanship. They help us to gain skills. They give us, a work ethic. So why would we want to undermine these kinds of authorities? And of course, my thesis is that institutions of community are important and we need them for our growth. But it's imperative that we do not derive our identity from any of them. And so subversion, the purpose of subversion, is to prevent captivity to any institution or any system. You do not want to be held captive by such things. And so institutions of community are not bad and they're not evil. In fact, they're the vehicles for much good, as I've said. But nonetheless, each community comes with an elixir that kind of anesthetizes us to our true self. Now, each institution only succeeds if it's able to keep us on the inside, right? Institutions grow by assimilating outsiders and turning them into insiders. And the trade-off is that they give us a pseudonym. They give us a quasi-identity. But no institution can give us our true self, which comes only from our maker. And so if we accept the trade and we settle for the identity of the institution, we jump into the mold that it offers and we conform to its institution, then the masquerade begins, and we lose consciousness. I liken this to dozing off to who we really are. And the illusion is that we are actually the activity. We are actually the title on our desk or on our business cards. We actually think we are our contribution to the band or the team. We actually think that our participation is who we are, as if such things could actually define us at a deep level. You see, it's wonderful to have our passions and our interests, our hobbies, or our pastimes, but it's another thing for these to have us. In fact, that's the very definition of idolatry. I really enjoy mountain biking and I really enjoy my mountain bike community. Everywhere I go all over the world, if you have a mountain bike underneath you, you have friends. But I'm not a mountain biker. Me, deep down inside, I am not defined by mountain biking. It's just something I truly enjoy to do. There's a very vital nuance there. So Paul says in Romans 6:12, he says that our battle, it's not against flesh and blood. It's against, get this, principalities and powers. Our battle is against rulers and authorities. You see, Paul got that, man. He was always dealing with rulers and authorities, whether it was Rome or whether it was his Jewish religious leaders. Institutions offer us a surrogate self, right? That's why they're attractive to us. We think that might be who we are. And it gives us something, but then it imprisons us. And, Paul tells us that when these things go wrong, the power is not the people in the institution. It's not the flesh and blood, but it's the present darkness and spiritual forces of evil. Now, that is a different way of saying that the thing behind the thing, the thing behind the institutional power when it goes bad is actually much darker than you assume. And this is why in the story of Jesus that I talked about a couple weeks ago in the three tests of anesthesia, when Jesus was in the desert, this is why the devil was able to offer him the kingdoms of the world. You see, the authority in the institutions, the authority in the kingdoms was actually his to give. You can read about that in Luke 4:6. Now, this doesn't mean that the world belongs to Satan. No, no, no. This is God's good world. Rather, that institutional evil is all his. Think about that for a minute. Institutional evil belongs to the devil. Now, you know, if I'm sitting here talking about the devil and I'm talking about Satan, there's a good portion of my audience that's going to say, okay, I think we're getting off track here. I mean, that's kind of a big pill to swallow intellectually, isn't it, Kev? I mean, it's you know, are we really going to go there? And so for those of you who are in that place, let me just kind of repack this for you in a different way. Now, while you may not understand that passage about Jesus and the devil intellectually, it may not make sense. I promise you it makes sense to you experientially. Okay, let's all go back to our junior high and high school days. Do you remember how it felt to be excluded or diminished or forsaken? You know, during those times in my life, our family didn't have a lot of resources, and we often picked up things like shoes and clothes from, you know, discount places, and there was a great deal on this really off-brand kind of shoe. I don't know if they have them anymore, but they were called kangaroos. And mine were white with some red coloring on them. But after a couple weeks, the red faded and it turned pink. And I remember people teasing me that I had pink kangaroos. And something like shoes just put me onto the sidelines. I didn't have an identity. I wasn't as welcomed and liked and stuff. Of course, you have your friends that kind of tease you a little bit, but they keep you in. But I can remember the pain of that. And that's not a unique experience at all. I mean, why does it hurt so much to be relegated to the sidelines like that? I mean, do you remember your friendships and your other groups? I mean, why do you think it was so great to be the captain of the sports team? You remember all the cliques and all the different people, how we all hung around in different groups? I mean, you know, cliques provide, as a community, as an institution, a clique is really the mold. It provides an identity for us as we transition out of the institution of the family. The cliques become the next institution that we become conformed to. And face it, we all conform because we're trying to be somebody. You know, you could be in the band, kind of a band geek, and then all of a sudden you become on the football team or the track team, and you start hanging out with the jocks and working out and dressing like it. And you know, there's a betrayal of your original group and an adoption of a new group as your identity is conformed to the new thing. So this is something we all get. And it's horrible to be excluded because it feels like isolation. And it feels wonderful to be included because we're talking about identity. This is an ontological reality. So some adults never really get out of this. And they spend all their time and their lives and their money trying to prove themselves to some group or maintain possession of some fleeting existential sense of belonging. It's sad. But these are prisons and traps. And I mean, where do you think the fear of missing out comes from? I mean, you're always on the phone and you're always connecting because you don't want to miss out on something. But why? Because you're deriving your identity from an institutional power. And most people know this. You would call it a living hell if you live that way, because that is precisely the Bible's definition. And so institutional power emerges everywhere we see it. We see it everywhere. Wherever there's two or more people, you do have politics. You do have a group. And see, this thing, even if you're standing in the checkout line and the lady in front of you is going slow, you can turn to the person behind you and immediately create some solidarity in opposition to what's happening. And maybe you say, gosh, that person's not very smart. Boy, that person didn't come very prepared or whatever. And that institutional power emerges between us. And this power is the opposite It is the adversary of life and liberty and love. Now, adversary is just another term for the biblical word Satan. So now we understand how the Bible opens up something bigger, right? The story, there's something bigger beyond the story. Institutional evil exchanges love for control. And we've all been in groups like that where the people really want control or power, or title, authority. They don't want influence. They don't really want to really love somebody. And the solution is not abandoning our community institutions, right? Don't misunderstand what I'm saying today to think that I'm just dissing our local band or our teams or whatever. No. They're so vital to our life and our maturing process. But I am saying that subverting institutional corruption with love and inclusion is absolutely necessary. And you can only do that if you don't derive your identity from that institution. Jesus called this being salt and light. You can make a loose fist, and inside your hand is a little darkness, right? It's dark inside there. And that darkness has no power over the light in your room. But you could take the same space and light a match in a dark room, and that little tiny light is going to light the whole thing. And that's what he's talking about in Matthew 5, 13 through 16. This is supposed to be a pervasive influence in the world of love and liberty and life. And you give it and you dispense it into these communities, and it subverts the power that would corrupt and control. That's the model. That's part of the bigger story. And you see, our communities, they just don't define us. Our community is not our home. And it's easy to really love what we do. You might love your bowling league or your baseball team or whatever it is that you do, your golf friends. But that is not who you are. It's something you do. The big story of the Bible is that community cannot provide ontology, our being. This is why I'm the uncoach, because most coaches out there are always telling you that if you want to be more, you just have to do more. And I have to uncoach them, because it's really your being creates your doing, not vice versa. You see, this is why Jesus says we can gain the whole world but lose ourselves. We forfeit ourselves in Luke 9:25. Now, Jesus had friends. He had the disciples and people around him all the time, but they didn't define him. You remember that passage in Matthew 17:17, where he says, he's looking over at his friends who couldn't heal a person who was sick, and he just said, "Faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to bear with you?" He wasn't jumping in to say, "Hey, I'm you guys." There's another passage in Mark 6:4 that really shows us that Jesus had a local community, but he certainly didn't define himself by that local community. He says a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among relatives of his own household. In other words, the people that would be and should be his local community, he easily distanced himself from. He could do no real miracles there. You see, scholars believe that Jesus was a carpenter, but never once does he identify himself as such. He's undefined. Undefined by these institutional powers. Now, that's important for us to understand. You see, this is where we're going to pivot, right? We're going to pivot here because, you see, the correction to institutional power is supposed to be the church. It's supposed to be this new living organism that goes out into the world. It's not supposed to be another institution. Jesus didn't set up a new religion with a new institution to be against all other religions and institutions. See, the church is supposed to be a group of extremely diverse people who serve one another and serve the world and their communities, not a group of conformists who plunder others for their gain. The church is supposed to be a collective that lives by one rule, the rule of love, and that they infiltrate every nook and cranny of the world like a virus. It's not supposed to be an angry mob locked in arms, governed by many rules and oppressive leaders who wage war on the world. See, the church is really any person whose life compass is true north. And you know who you are. And you know who these people are. You've all met them. They're unshakable. They have deep integrity. The church is not a corner building or a social club that, you know, that employs ethical violence on people to gain conformity or to help their machine run. The church is, it's supposed to be all people entering their favorite communities, their favorite institutions, and influencing them with love for one another. And as such, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 2:15, it's supposed to be an invisible fragrance. It's not supposed to be this annoying contender that gets offended easily at every meeting. You see, we don't go to church. We are the church, or you're not. You either are or you're not, but you don't go. And so this message is much bigger than we first see. Subversion is the hallmark of the church. It should make everything in the world better. Instead, we have institutions that call themselves the church that scare and threaten people, and we know that much violence and hatred and pain is left in their wake. And this isn't a critique of every church out there. You know if you go to a good church or not. But let's be honest about what we're really seeing in the world. Is the church really bringing transformation, or is it just becoming a counterculture? You see, if you understand what I'm saying, then you know that at a deep level, showing up in your life every single day with love and patience and kindness and gratitude, you know that that's the path of true friendship and redemption of everything. And you, by whatever framework you define yourself, you are the church. You see, and only those who are free and empowered to leave the community institution have the ability to bear light and repair them. I mean, try and vote somebody into Congress to change Congress. It never happens, and it never will. You can't change it from inside if you're deriving your identity from that institution. If your identity comes from outside, then you can go back in and shed light into the institution. That's the whole model. That's why it's subversive. Jesus said a tree is known by its fruit. Well, so is the church. I mean, consider the driver who lets someone cut in front of them, who just waves you in. Consider the leader who isn't climbing for a title or power or benefit, but's willing to risk their own exposure for the sake of their team or for others. I mean, consider that person who just can't settle for status quo, but is always courageously seeking incremental change, making everything better. They just come every day with positivity. Consider that clerk or that maid, that worker, that waitress, that servant, that first responder, whoever it is who really understands service and they serve from the heart. Consider those people who suffer under the tyranny of institutional power and they hunger deeply for things to be set right but are powerless at this time, right? To all of you who are tapping into the heart of this message, you, all of you, you're displaying the greatest power in the universe. You are the church, whether you attend one or not. You see, you're embodying the power of all human evolution. You're embodying the power of all human transformation. You're embodying the power of human progression. You are the hope for the future. You get this. That's what it means to be the church. So don't lose heart. Do not quit. And as James Finley would say, never, ever, ever break faith with your awakened heart. Just go out and live your life and live it from the center of love. Make every incremental difference that you can. And our world is counting on you. And because of you, it'll never be the same. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.